With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18-plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, everybody. This is the Cricket Badger podcast.
Each badger marks the track with its own scent.
His black legs are short but very powerful for digging. The name badger probably comes from the French word bêcher, meaning digger.
Hello, everybody. Welcome along. It's another edition of the Cricket Badger podcast. And after all of the IPL, 53 editions of the IPL, we're back to normality to some degree. And today we are talking about Bangladesh cricket. I'm joined on the line by Toby Radford, who's a friend of the podcast. Been on before, Toby. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
And also by Tohid Qureshi, who is based in London, writer and broadcaster about Bangladesh cricket in the main. And Tohid, it's good to have you on.
Thanks, James. It's great to be on.
And let's start with you, Toby. You've been appointed as the high performance head coach. I'm obviously former Glamorgan, former West Indies coach. How are you finding it? You've not been in the position long. Is it as you'd expect?
Yeah, I'd been here before, back in 2012 with the West Indies, and I stayed in the same hotel, so it's been straight over to the same room, I think, with the same view. So we'd played here in a series against Bangladesh back in 2012, test series, one dayers. So I kind of had an idea of what the traffic would be like in Dhaka, you know, what the pitches would be like, and just the general sort of culture, really, because it's, you know, it's very different, obviously, to life in the West, you know. Yeah.
I mean, as a cricket coach and doing what you do, obviously, as we mentioned, West Indies, then to Bangladesh, and you've been around a bit. It's where do you call home? Because you put down your roots in different places for different lengths of time, don't you?
Yeah. No, I mean, home's always, home in the last 5 or 6 years has been Cardiff. So based in Wales, and my wife's there, my son is in school there. So, you know, whenever I've not been on, you know, I'd be on tours with the West Indies, and then in between tours, I'd go back to Cardiff. And likewise, now when I finish this camp, I'll be back into Cardiff for a few months before I come back again. So home is in Wales.
And when you took this job as the high performance head coach with the Bangladesh Cricket Board, was that something you had to apply for? Did somebody give you a ring and say, are you interested? How did that work?
He said, I had an agent actually who was based out in Pakistan, Galaxy Sport, and they knew that the job was coming up and thought that I would sort of fit the bill because, you know, back in 2010, I'd set up the West Indies High Performance Centre with a young Jason Holder and a young Channing Gabriel and pretty much half of this current test team. So, you know, my background had been with International Academy. I'd also set up the Middlesex Academy, you know, many, many years ago with a Stephen Finn and an Owen Morgan and a few of those boys. So my background had been in academies. This job sort of fitted the bill in a way. You know, it was the Bangladesh are the current under-19 world champions. So they got some very good young players, and those players were coming into the high-performance team. So I think I fitted the bill in many senses. And the CEO rang me up and we agreed terms on it. And and that was it, really. So it was a sort of a quick decision, but it seemed the right one. And the way it works is a certain number of days per year, which allows me to come out and work in blocks. Okay. So I've just come out now. I've done 6 weeks. I finish on Monday, all being well, fly back Monday, Tuesday to the UK. And then I'll come back again then, sort of February, March. Island A are meant to be coming out for a tour, so we'll play against them. And I'm hoping to bring this team over to the UK and potentially play some sort of county side in that pre-season period when they're just sort of preparing for the season. So, you know, a nice mix of training with them and then obviously some proper match play as well.
Tohid, obviously, is a Bangladesh cricket fan. From my perspective, I've never been to the subcontinent. I always get this image that India, everybody in India loves cricket. Pakistan probably very similar. Bangladesh, is that something similar to Tohid, that everybody in Bangladesh loves cricket, or is it less so there?
Everyone loves cricket in Bangladesh. Yeah, I'm sure Toby's probably realised from his experiences out there just how obsessed and fanatical they are about the game. You're quite right, James. Yeah, obviously the game is huge, I think, across the whole of certainly Bangladesh. I'd say probably, you know, the newest cricket playing or test playing nation out of those countries in the subcontinent. They've actually, this week has been the 20th anniversary of the very first test match they played against India back in 2000. So yeah, they're amongst the newer test playing nation, but what they lack certainly make up for in their fanaticism and passion for the game.
Does that mean for somebody like Toby coming in there as the high performance head coach, which has obviously been announced and everybody knows he's there now, does that mean that there's expectancy there that Toby should feel?
I guess possibly yes. I mean, it's such a high profile kind of sport, and obviously, you know, the national team, any coaches associated with a national team are, you know, by virtue of being in those conditions, they are high profile. So yeah, you know, you ask the average rickshaw driver on the streets of Dhaka who the head coach of the Bangladesh team, and he'll know who it is. Unlike probably, you know, most people walking around the streets of South London.
And Toby, do you feel that as somebody going in from England or from Wales rather to Bangladesh, that you take that role and a lot's expected of you?
You certainly feel that the sport is a religion here, and that they are fanatical about it. I mean, when you go into the gates of the big, you know, the main stadium here, there's always a lot of media around. If you're in the academy ground at the back throwing balls, there's always photographers taking pictures up on the side. There's a massive interest, which you don't necessarily get in England for cricket. Perhaps it's more for football there, but for here it is their main sport. And you're very aware that wherever you are and whatever you're doing, that somebody may be watching, they may be taking a photograph. You know, there's that interest. I don't feel that as a pressure at all. I mean, I quite enjoy it, actually, that people are interested and done a lot of interviews out here for local papers and TV and whatever. And they're very knowledgeable, and you can have good chats with them about cricket and about the players. And I think because the under-19s are the current world champions, you know, they've got even more interest than normal, because pretty much all that team is in the group I've got. I've got 26 players in this high-performance group, and it's virtually the under-19 side, plus obviously some other slightly older players. You know, being the champions, they have even more interest in seeing how these players develop and where they go next and how quickly they can potentially progress into the international team.
When you were on the podcast before, we spoke about your work in a very similar role, as you said, in the Caribbean, and that the facilities there at times weren't the best. How is it in Bangladesh? Have you got all the things that you need to actually get these youngsters trained up and exactly how you want them?
Yeah, I mean, the cricket facilities at the stadium are very good. They've got an academy ground at the back with, you know, got your three good grass nets. You've got your own middle pitch there. They've got the indoor school with the bowling machines. You've got the access to the main stadium. So we've been able, I mean, I've put a program together in the, you know, for the last few weeks. And within that program, a lot of one-to-one time, net time, middle practice time. We've had some internal games. I did a focus on sort of test match type cricket for a week or so. I then did some 50 over stuff. This week we've done some T20. We've been able to cover everything, and all the facilities are there. And I suppose with 26 players in the group, we've been able to play those internal games and get some quite evenly matched teams. So that's been really good. The board moved very quickly. I mean, we had a tour. The first team were meant to be in Sri Lanka, and because of COVID issues, they couldn't go. Our team was meant to go to Sri Lanka as well, and that was sort of called off. So very quickly, the board put together what they called the President's Cup, and they put three teams together of all the best 50 players in.
You coached one of those, didn't you?
I did. I coached one of the teams. It was a great tournament. I had some really good players. I mean, in our team, we had Mushfiqur Rahim, who's obviously, you know, world-class middle-order batsman and a great guy. So I had good youngsters and someone like Mushfiqur in there. It was great for me as a coach because I could use him as the, you know, the great example for these players in terms of how to prepare, how to go about the game, the way he played. So it was brilliant to have good experienced players in and around these youngsters. So we've had that as preparation. And then obviously, as I say, the last few weeks, we've had these lads following a program that I've put together to try and develop their own sort of individual games.
I was just interested in what you were saying there about the fact that the board kind of moved quite quickly. They set up that President's Cup tournament recently, and there's going to be this new kind of T20 tournament. But I guess looking at things overall, domestic cricket unfortunately hasn't come back in its entirety. The first class competition hasn't come back. Things like the Dhaka Premier League and indeed the Bangladesh Premier League have all kind of been on hold. And obviously there's been no international cricket, the series against Zimbabwe back in sort of April time. Do you feel that the players themselves are kind of suffered because of that lack of competitive cricket?
I think it took them a bit to get back into it. I mean, some of them had a good few months off. You know, one or two had trained really well at home. Others perhaps didn't have the facilities and didn't come back quite as fit. So I think it's taken some a little bit longer to get back in. But probably halfway through that President's Cup, or for these younger ones, by halfway through this program, I think they're all up and running now and they're all in quite a good place. And they go into this next T20 competition now, you know, raring to go in a sense. So I think that where all these players are at the moment, I'd say they're in a good place physically. They've had a lot of cricket now over the last few weeks. I mean, for those who are involved in the President's Cup and then the camp, they've had 5 weeks. And you know the stories of all the other pros playing in the tournaments around the world, you know, in this lockdown period. It's been tough. I mean, some of these lads have been cooped up in the academy building, you know, in the rooms there for 5 weeks. And it's just cricket room because of the, you know, being within the bubble. So that's tough. And I think mentally it sort of takes its toll a little bit. I mean, normally when I run an academy program, you know, I like to have days off in the middle for the lads. I like to go and take them to something away from cricket just to give them a break, get to know them outside of cricket. We haven't been able to do any of that. I mean, everywhere you go, you've got a face mask on. No one else from the outside is allowed into the academy bubble. You can't mix with other players who've been living on the outside. It's very, very tough living in a bubble. You know, you're on constant watch of who you're speaking to, the way you're speaking to, have you got your mask, all this type of stuff. And, you know, that's mentally quite draining over a period of four or five weeks, you know. So they've had to deal with all of that.
Badgers are furry creatures. 85% of women badgers think bad grooming is a major turn-off. 80% of women badgers think men should trim below the belt. 89% of men think good grooming is essential to their professional success. Don't just dismiss it out of hand. Get on there, manscaped.com. Check out their great range of male grooming accessories. Hygiene, appearance, attractiveness, confidence. Simply go to manscaped.com, quote the discount code BADGER. You get 20% off, you get free shipping, and you get some seriously quality equipment. Manscaped.com. Together, we save balls. I saw a few of the comments. I mean, we spoke before about the West Indies series, but England were in that bubble all the way through the summer. And Jofra Archer and a few of the other guys have gone into the IPL bubble after that. I mean, Jimmy Anderson said, I think that, you know, just like you said, you know, you play cricket, you then wake up the next morning, open the curtains, and the cricket ground's kind of there on your doorstep again, and there's no escape. That takes some dealing with, doesn't it? And you must have found that going in there.
Yeah, I have. And look, I mean, when I came in for this other tournament, I mean, we were tested. I had 5 days or 6 days in quarantine, having just landed from the UK. I had to test twice, and then once I was negative, I could then eat with the rest of the players, and then I was sort of tested regularly. We did that tournament for 2 weeks, and you would just eat in the hotel in our own restaurant. The chefs would stay in the hotel. They wouldn't go outside either. You'd be driven to the ground, play the cricket, driven back straight in your room, and it was like that for days on end. Now, I think I've been there just over 40 days. Every day I've had a taxi to the ground. The taxi driver stays within the grounds, the cricket ground, so he's not allowed out. He's employed by the board. Wow. So everything, they're trying their best to do everything within the bubble, you know. But even then, when you get in the ground, you know, media will come in from the outside. Other people will come out. You're not quite sure when you're talking to people whether they're within the bubble or outside. So, you know, it's just a crazy life that we're all living at the moment. And, you know, you're trying to focus, you know, heavily on the job that you're here to do, which we do. But it's very, very much hotel ground, day after day after day. And, you know, when you've done that for 30 or 40 days, it's mentally quite draining. And, you know, you don't see anything other than that, you know.
I assume when you took the job and as you say, you go over in blocks and everything, the COVID-19 situation and world travel and everything is never, it's not that simple at the moment, is it? Was there ever any worry that you were going to get out there for this period?
I mean, there was leading up to when I flew. I mean, I flew early October and didn't quite know how it was going to be. And, you know, you got to Heathrow. Heathrow was much quieter than normal. The airline wasn't flying out of its normal term. It just was a very different experience. But the airline itself, you know, you weren't sitting next to other passengers. They managed to put you in diagonal seats and empty seats around you. So there were clearly the airlines are doing things to make life easier. And then I landed in Bahrain and I went to the gate to get on to the leg that would take me from Bahrain to Dakar. And a lot of the Bangladeshis work in Bahrain, you know, sort of building, etc. And there was no social distancing at all. So I got down to the gate and it was almost like there was no pandemic at all. They didn't have a mask on. And I think I was sort of up against the wall, almost trying to get out of the room. But it was quite frightening almost, because everything up until then, from London to there, had been very spaced out and you were very well aware. But you think, oh my God, this is, you know, it's a potential nightmare.
Toby, I can only sympathise and empathise with that experience. I've been on that flight many a time. It's never been a fun experience.
You know exactly what I dealt with. Yeah.
And that was probably when COVID wasn't around, Toby, as well. So the COVID element was even worse for Toby, wasn't it?
Exactly. I think, as Toby said, there's a lot of kind of expat workers, you know, working on sort of manual construction sites. So, you know, all of the construction sites in Dubai and places like that. Yeah, they're probably not the best at queuing etiquette and all that kind of thing.
The other interesting thing was I got in at 4 a.m, 5 a.m. in Dakar, right? And I had two bags. I had my personal sort of suitcase and I had my cricket bag with all my flingers and my mitts and all my coaching stuff. And only the one bag turned up. So only my personal bag, my coaching bag didn't turn up at all. And I think it was until about 4 days later and that the bag suddenly arrived on another flight. So they didn't put all the bags on either. So at one point, I didn't know if I'd have my coaching stuff ever arrive, you know.
Well, it could have been worse, couldn't it? You've got the choice there of either coaching naked with your mitts or having your... Yeah, it's bad either way, isn't it? But there you go.
Yeah, exactly. It turned up at the end.
The training camp that you've had, obviously getting to know the guys out there and probably as much on a personal level as technique as well. I mean, obviously, you know, your role is to make their cricket better, but getting to know them as people too.
Look, it's a massive part of coaching, isn't it? You know, they always say you coach a person first before you coach the game. So, and I found them very nice guy, good coach, keen to sort of listen and develop, very coachable, to be honest. I mean, they've been great. Some of them speak better English than others. In certain cases, you almost need another coach who speaks good English to sort of translate for them to make sure that your message is definitely getting across and they fully, you know, they totally understand what you're trying to say. So, you know, one or two speak really good English. And one or two, as I say, a bit more tricky, but you can get round it. You know, I've been lucky that other coaches who work here do speak good English, and then they can, as I say, they can translate it for me.
When you took the job, Toby, and obviously you've had conversations with the Bangladesh Cricket Board about what your role would be. Is it in this sort of situation they say to you, right, this is what you're going to do, X, Y, Z, this is your role? Or is there scope for you to add your own stamp on that?
No, it's been very much, look, they're employing me to come in and hopefully use my sort of past experience and experience to do that, to run this type of thing. So it's very much over to me and I've just put the program together. So once they employ you, what they can do and they have done is say, look, we've got a tournament coming. So initially I wrote a 6-week program and then that was cut down to 4 weeks because they wanted the President's Cup. And then the 4 week was cut down to 2 weeks because they wanted the corporate league at the end. So my 6-week program sort of got squeezed in the middle. And then what I've done within my sort of last 15 days, I've squeezed down what would have been in 6 weeks, which was a bit of test cricket, a bit of 50, a bit of 20. And the type of things I wanted to cover, I've sort of squashed it into this 15-day period, which worked really well. And we covered pretty much everything I wanted. So from that end, they would decide if other tournaments are going to happen. In terms of what I deliver and how I deliver it, that's totally down to me. And then they're basically trusting me that hopefully I know what I'm doing, and I'll go and set it up the way I see best, really.
I'm just interested in a couple of the individuals that you're actually working with. I just want to know just how impressed you are or have been with Akbar Ali. For people who don't know, Akbar Ali was the captain of the World Cup. Obviously, that winning that final against India in South Africa was a huge deal. But what really impressed me was his captaincy throughout the tournament. I had the pleasure of interviewing him a few months ago, and he just came across as being so mature, so level-headed, and actually spoke really good English. It was quite funny. I was interviewing him, and I was quite happy to kind of chat in my quite rusty bungler. You know, he said, no, let's do it in English. I need to improve my English. He just came across well.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't captained the side that we had this week, but I totally agree with you. I mean, very mature. You can see with him that he's never satisfied. He's always, when you work with him, he's always looking for that next bit. How can I get that little bit better? He's a very destructive middle order player. I mean, he played an innings last week in our 2-day game, went in about 5 or 6 and sort of worked his way in. And then he's explosive, really. I mean, the minute you bowl full, it's back over your head or deep mid wicket. Yeah, I think he hit 6 or 7 sixes in that innings, got 140 odd. This week, again, in the 1-day game, scored very quickly. I mean, he's explosive, but his shot selection is so good. You know, he's no sloggy, proper hitting. And as an individual, as you say, I mean, he's very mature and he's great to work with. I've really enjoyed working with. Made one or two little adjustments to his trigger movements, got him into a nice sort of powerful sort of position. But he's been keen to do that, and he's always happy to go to that next bit, I think, and take his game to the next bit. So no, he's been great, and he's got something a little bit special, I think, about him as a person and clearly as a player. I can see him going on and being a top player.
That's certainly the hope, I guess, for all Bangladesh fans. But I think we're also kind of conscious of the fact that there's been lots of hugely talented kind of youngsters, either at under 19 level or, you know, kind of in their early 20s that show immense promise but just don't quite kind of kick on at international level. Do you think he's kind of big earmarked for the kind of national honoured and potential leadership roles as well? Do you think he feels a burden of kind of expectation around that?
I don't think so at all. I mean, he seems very confident. I think he backs himself. He knows he can play. But he's not satisfied. I mean, you know, when you raise issues with him or you talk about things that he can develop on his game, you don't feel for 1 minute that this guy believes he's already there. You feel that he wants to go away and work on it. He wants to hit a few extra balls after practice to work on something that you may have mentioned to him. So I see a good work ethic. I see a very professional approach. And I think he reads the game well and he's sensible. It was interesting. My first view of him, right, was on a bowling machine a couple of weeks ago. And we were doing some away swingers. And I was sort of talking about playing Jimmy in England and that type of thing. And he really struggled. He was getting squared up and he was nicking off and his technique was getting exposed a little bit. And then the minute we went into a match about 3 or 4 days later where there was no massive swing, obviously wicket's a bit flatter, the ball was coming through. I mean, he just looked a totally different batsman, very, very at home in this environment, on these pitches against this type of bowling and destructive. So, you know, clearly he's been brought up over here and he knows how to play over here. And I think that the type of nature that he's got, I think he will look to develop his game so that he can score those type of runs anywhere around the world, which is what I've spoken to all of them about. I've said, there's no good Bangladesh just being good in Bangladesh. They've got to go and compete and win abroad, which is whether it's facing Jimmy at Lord's or Mitchell Stark in Perth. You have to be able to compete in these other environments and on these other pitches. And hence why I'm keen to try and get tours to try and create players who can play in those. Because the only way they're going to develop and get better is performing on them and practicing in them. So I'm definitely keen to put some tours together for them. You know?
Yeah, no, I wholeheartedly agree. And I think, those tours would be invaluable, certainly, you know, if you could bring over that squad to the UK, to England to play games, I'm sure it would improve their games no end. Interestingly, well, that under-19 team that won the World Cup, they did tour England, I think, as a group a couple of times.
Yeah.
But, also on the bowling front, just interested in your thoughts on Shorifall, who, again, in that World Cup final against India, was very impressive with his pace, really not taking a backward step against the real vaunted Indian batting lineup.
Yeah, he's had a bit of a back twinge in his last week. And I would say in the other games he played, he probably bowled a little bit on the short side. So he probably didn't bowl the length he would want to be bowling. The bowler who's really impressed is a guy called Shumon, S-U-M-O-N, Shumon Khan, who took 4 or 5 wickets in the last game in the final of the President's Cup, bowled really well, manages to sort of swing it across the left-hander, edges, nicks off a lot of left-handers, and bowls particularly well. What I've done with the bowlers over these last 2 weeks is sort of get them very much into the pitch maps. In terms of where they're landing the ball and consistency that's needed at the top end of the game. And also, obviously, the wagon wheels where batters are scoring against them, but mainly in terms of where they landed the ball. And this Shumon Khan, I mean, he's fantastic control. Very, very good for a young bowler. So he's sort of stood out on the seamers. He's not particularly quick, but just in the right area and enough movement. And actually, I could see him bowling well in England on a pitch that's got a little bit of grass in it and condition that might help him, you know. But very, very good control.
Whereabouts do you fit into the coaching hierarchy in Bangladesh, Toby? Because as obviously the head coach of the national team, will you be working with the national team too, or is it purely with the youngster?
No, I mean my role is very much high performance centre. But I mean now I've got 4 days before I fly back, so they've given me some of the senior batters that they want me to work with. So I'm working with Saif Hasan tomorrow, is one of the test batters. So I've got a couple of hours with him tomorrow morning. Shuma Sarkar, I think I'm potentially doing a session with him before I go back on Monday. So the selectors are keen, I think, while I'm here, and obviously with my batting background, that they sort of get full use out of me. So even though the camp's finished, and it makes sense, really, you know, if there's a couple of batters who need a bit of help and I'm here, then, you know, I'd like to work with them anyway. So it sort of works for everyone, I think.
While they've got you and they're paying you, they might as well flog you to death, aren't they, before they send you back home?
absolutely. Get me flinging as many balls in this 35-degree heat. No, I enjoy it. Look, and you know, that's what I love more than anything. You know, it's been my job with the Windies for the last 8 years is working on a one-to-one basis with good batters. That's what I love doing. And no, it'd be nice tomorrow. I'm looking forward to doing a bit of work with him. You know, Saif's obviously a good player. He's played some international cricket. And, you know, hopefully I can add something to his game while I'm here. You know,
I've seen your comments, Toby, about wanting to try and I guess it's the way I've interpreted it anyway, is a little bit about priorities, that you were in the West Indies in 2018. When Bangladesh never got past 200, were 43 all out, struggled against pace, but then won the one-day series. And I think you've made a little bit of an emphasis on test cricket and against facing the fast bowlers and trying to get a better technique against the real quick so you can sustain a longer innings against some of the world's best.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that series in the Caribbean, I mean, Shannon Gabriel's extra pace, you know, Jason Holder's bounce, it sort of blew them away a little bit. Test matches were getting over in 2.5 days. But the minute, as you say, they put the coloured clothing on and played with the white ball, you know, Bangladesh were a totally different side. In fact, they beat us, I think, 3-2 in the one day competition, and they won the T20s. But it was very clear that the pace and the bounce was what exposed them. So the emphasis for me in this early part of this camp was about technique. It was about batters getting in line. It was about knowing where your off stump is and all the technical bits of being a high-end player in the longer format of the game. And as I said to the lads and had a good chat with them, you know, for me, you know, it's still test cricket is still the best format of cricket, still the best test of a cricketer. And I do believe that the best players are the best players in any format. And, you know, whether it's a Kane Williamson or a Virat Kohli or a Ben Stokes, the best players can play a 5-day test match against a red ball, and they can also then deliver on a 50 over or 20 over. But they've got good technique, and then they just develop that and do the funky stuff around it. But you need that good technique first. So I'm honing in on those players with that first.
I would imagine that there's a great temptation with youngsters today. I mean, I fully take what you've just said. I think test cricket is the pinnacle, and it's where you are. You find out who is the best player in the world. But as a youngster in Bangladesh, and you're thinking, if I could just get an IPL contract, then this is me made for life.
Yeah, but I mean, it's my job to sell to them that Virat Kohli, before he made all his money in the IPL, was a fine player who honed his skills, you know, in India and then in test cricket, and then moved into this. Chris Gayle scored a 100 in test cricket in Sri Lanka before he went and made his money in the IPL. So I do honestly believe that the best players in that format have generally come from being, you know, having good technique honed in the longer format first. I think these lads that I've seen over the last couple of weeks, they kind of buy into that. And the quality I'm seeing, got some exceptional young batters, honestly, some real high quality young batters. And as you'd expect here, some very, very good spinners as well. But, you know, I've seen some really good young batters who do shape up well. And with one or two little things that we've talked about, guards and positioning in the crease to help them on off stump and lining up the ball better, you know, I'm seeing players who have been maybe earmarked as, you know, just white ball players, suddenly thinking, hang on, I can play the red ball. I can get behind it. I can judge better. And it's more of a mindset than anything else. You haven't had to change them a lot technically. You've lined them up better and you've got them into this idea of, you know, you're going to leave a few more balls and that's it. You know, I haven't had to do a lot with them, but you're starting to get a little bit of success with some who may have just been, you know, sort of rubber stamped as, oh, he's only a white ball player. I think you can still be quite good in the red ball just with one or two little tweaks here and there.
You talked earlier on about trying to get the youngsters in Bangladesh. You're obviously very at home, literally, on their own surfaces.
Yeah.
And the lad you mentioned who struggled when the ball started to swing. How much can you coach that in Bangladesh? I mean, obviously, coming to England, they'd experience it firsthand, but how much can you replicate something like that actually in a net session?
For me, a lot of it I've done over the years, I've done on bowling machines. I think you can do a lot on bowling machines because you can get good pace, good swing. You can change the angle by moving the machines both sides. I do a little drill, which works quite well, where I have two machines in the same net. So I set one up as a sort of a jimmy away swinger, and I set the other one up as a left armer kind of bolt type thing swinging back in. And I get the players to face six balls on one. I jump across to the other one and then face six balls from the other. It's replicating what you get in a match where you might have a left armer swinging in one end, you might have the right armer swinging away at the other. And what they're doing then, I've got to change my guard, I've got to change my alignment, I've got to think about what I leave and play. So I'm really testing them in practice. And obviously I can, with a machine, land it fairly consistently in a place with good pace. So I think you can do a lot with that. Ideally, of course, you then want to go and put that in on a grass type surface that creates a similar thing. And they're saying, I haven't been there, but they're saying that in Sylhet, that there's very good cricket facilities and that the pitches have a bit more grass, a bit quicker, and they carry a bit more. So I think potentially we can have the odd camp or two there as well. And would replicate sort of playing abroad a little bit more than some of the sort of slower pitches around, slower, lower pitches that you get in Dhaka. I think you can do a certain amount, but obviously the final bit is trying to go away and put the players in an environment that is, you know, going to really test them, I think, whether that's pace or bounce or, you know, seeming wickets in England, you know.
Just coming back on what you were saying there about the Sylhet ground or the Sylhet International Cricket Stadium, as it's known. Yeah, I've been there a few times and I definitely agree with what you're saying. Firstly, there's fantastic facilities there. It's a really nice ground that's kind of set amongst lots of kind of tea gardens, tea estates, all very leafy, very green, but also the facilities I know are excellent. And interesting what you say about sort of fast bowling, and they've actually produced through the national team, fast bowlers are from Sylhet. So Abu Jayed, Rahi, both from Sylhet, and basically, you know, they're the first choice pace attack. Yeah. So there's certainly something going on up in the northeast of the country that hopefully, you know, can be a benefit to all the
population. You do. And look, and as players, you often become a product of the environment that you grow up in. And obviously, here, what you're seeing is a lot of very good spinners. They're used to bowling on slow wicket. You're seeing batters who play spin well, who manipulate the ball off medium pace as well, because that's what they get. So it's natural, isn't it? In the same way that English players tend to play the swinging ball well, but don't play the spinning bowling particularly well, because that's what we're brought up on. So you've got to find ways for these players. If you want to compete around the world and away from home, you've got to find ways to expose the players to that in their development.
I've seen in the Bangladesh stuff that there's a bit of a talent hunt going on with them at the moment, that you're trying to identify some of the good unfound Bangladeshi stars of the future potentially.
Is that, I don't know much about that. Is that through a sort of through a domestic sort of district type thing, or is that, I haven't seen that.
It was described as the talent hunt in the thing I read.
I mean, from
your position, I mean, obviously fairly new into it, but in England, they call it the pathway scheme, don't they? Where people kind of come through from clubs and schools and what have you into professional setups. The Bangladesh presumably have some kind of system where they identify the quality players.
Yeah, I mean, they've certainly got a very strong, you know, from 19, 17, 15, they've got good national squad setups all the way through that have, you know, proper fixture lists and good training. So, you know, once the player gets into that, obviously, then they can sort of progress through the system. I don't have a very good knowledge yet of how they bring them in from sort of clubs or districts or whatever to get into that system. But I know certainly when they're in it, they've got they'll have good coaching and good good camps, etc.
You're on a 1 year deal, is that right?
Yeah, August to August. So we'll sort of assess then, I think, see if they're happy, see if I'm happy, and take it from there. But I think it's a kind of job, if you want to make a big difference, you probably need 2 or 3 years to really sort of stamp something on it. So we'll see how the powers that be view at the end. In August, and we'll take it from there.
Bangladesh, there's massive potential there, isn't there? And as you say, I mean, we've seen with the national team, some of the stars that have come through have been absolutely glorious to watch. So if you can tap into some of that talent, the sky's the limit, really.
I think one of the interesting things I've seen is there's a lot of very good players, right? And I think you've got to be very selective in terms of ranking where those players are. When I came on here, one of the things I said to the selectors very early on, when I found out there's 26 players on the High Performance Centre, I said, normally you work with 15 or 16. When I was with the West Indies, I think we had 14 or 15. When I was with Middlesex, we had 14. 26 is a lot for a High Performance Centre. And it almost gives me the impression that they're not quite sure. These are all pretty good. Let's throw them in and see who comes through. I'm very much of the belief that you back your decision making, you rank them and you say, do you know what? These are our best 15 and we're going to polish these best 15 up and you're going to spend all your time with these best 15. The danger, I think, and this is what I see a little bit in Bangladesh cricket, there's a lot of very good players, a much of a muchness in many ways in terms of ability. And then you can end up spending a lot of time with some who maybe aren't going to make it or not quite good enough. And I think you've got to back your judgment on them. Who are the best ones? And then really spend your time on those. Don't ignore the other ones. Make sure they're catered in some way. But I think there's a danger of if you keep spending a lot of time with a lot of players, then I think you're almost sort of working to the lowest common denominator rather than the highest common denominator. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you get that in classrooms. That's one of the complaints about the English school system of classes of 35 or whatever, is that everybody's slowed down by the slowest kid, aren't they? And
yes, and I think there's a danger here of that. And this is certainly what my feedback's been, and I've done a report now on this first intake. If I was to rank, I've got 26 players here. I could quite easily, I know the top 16 are, and the other sort of, the other 9 or 10, you could still make sure they're covered in a certain area. But when you've got limited time with them, you don't really want to be spending that time across all 26 when I've got 15. I tell you what, if I had a bit more time with this one, I could really polish him up, send him up to Russell Domingo, get him in the first team and get him performing for the Bangladesh national team. You're slowed down when you've got a deal across all 26.
What you got to guard against, though, I guess, is the guy that matures 2 years later than maybe some of his peers who is potentially a world star but isn't quite there to actually pick that initial 15, I guess, isn't it?
I absolutely agree, and that's why you need another system to run alongside. So when I ran the Middlesex Academy, I don't know, 15 years ago, and I had Stephen Finn, Billy Godleman, Chris Wright, we had some very good players on there. But what we had with another group, we then had what we called a sub-academy or a junior academy, and they were still being looked after, still catered, but in a slightly different system. They wouldn't get quite as much, but you weren't trying to cater for all, for these huge numbers. You could get a lot more one-to-one time, a lot more really intensive time, and that's obviously the one-to-one time is where I believe you make the biggest difference. Back your decision making, back your judgment on who the best are, and then really polish them up and send them on. And ultimately my job is to send them on to Russell and try and get them in the national team, whether it's a test team or the 50s or the T20s, but the sooner I can get them there, the better for him and the better for Bangladesh.
I'd say it's actually quite an exciting time now for Bangladesh. The team, I feel, in terms of the senior side, they're definitely a team in transition. You've had a lot of the core of that well into their 30s. People like Tommy McLeod, people like Shafiq, people like Mushfiqur Mahmudullah, they're all kind of well into their 30s now, kind of coming towards the end of their career. I guess it's an exciting time for the youngsters out there, for people in that high-performance squad, because there is a real opportunity, a real chance to kind of stake their claim in the national team and kind of progress. From a fan's point of view, I guess, there's been old storms and kind of periods of inconsistency with Bangladesh cricket. So I know the fans also are really keen to kind of see the next generation kind of step up and perform at a more kind of consistent level, really.
No, I agree. I think it's a great time. I think these players have got a lot. I think there is an expectation because of the success these younger ones have had that we've got some very good players coming through. And it's really now about them sort of, you know, stepping up to the mark, being given the opportunity, which I think will come, and then being ready to take it, isn't it? And that's what it's all about. There's obviously, look, there's a big gulf between playing under-19s cricket and going and playing international cricket. It's a big jump up. And some make that jump up. Some make it quite quickly. Some take a bit longer. And some don't make it at all. And this role, the role I've got, is that bridging gap between, you know, your best 19, 20-year-olds getting ready to go and perform, and not just get into the international team, but actually delivering there. So that's a big jump up, you know. So it's getting them ready mentally, getting them ready technically. And a lot of what we've done the last couple of weeks is actually tactical. You know, as I've said to the lads many times when we've debriefed the games that we've played, in terms of what I'm seeing on ability, technical ability, they're as good as any team I've worked with, whether in England or in the Caribbean. The interesting thing for me, and where I think that the biggest improvements can be made, is tactically, in terms of how to play the game, right shot at the right time, bowling, you know, bowling the right delivery at the right time. I think that's the big area, the tactical side of the game. So hopefully the type of thing we've done this week with the internal matches, the debriefs we do, you know, that we're getting them up to speed in terms of the way they think about their cricket.
That's really interesting, actually, that the way, you know, it's the mind as well as the game, isn't it? And combining the two to make them as good as they can possibly be. It's exciting times by the sounds of it, though, for Bangladesh cricket, for you and for Tohid as well, as a person watching from a probably slightly further distance than he would want to. I guess as well, Toby, just to round off, and thank you very much indeed for coming on today. Post-COVID, whenever that may be, hopefully as soon as possible, you might get to actually see a bit of Bangladesh too.
No, I'd love to. And, you know, at the moment, as I say, I see the inside of a taxi, I see the cricket ground, and I see the inside of my room at a hotel. And look, I'm sure there's some lovely parts of Bangladesh I just haven't been able to get to. And at some point, you know, heaven forbid we get out of this situation we're all in, that I can get around the country and see other parts. And, I'd really enjoy that while I'm here, you know. But it's been good so far. I've really enjoyed the cricket the last few weeks. The players have been great. Attitudes have been great. Real quality, honestly, genuine quality to come to work with, which, you know, any coach, you want to work with high-end players and people who want to be coached. And it's been brilliant. So I've really enjoyed it. It's been great.
So if I can make you the Bangladesh Tourism Board for just a second, what would you recommend for Toby once he's able to get that mask off and actually get out there properly? Where in Bangladesh should he go and have a look at?
Because there are so few tourists, you will be treated like royalty wherever you go, basically, because, you know, you'll get a curiosity. But yeah, I mean, I'm a bit biased. My family hail from the northeast in Sylhet town, as do a lot of kind of expat Bangladeshis in the UK. So yeah, if you get the chance, do go up to Sylhet. As I said, lovely kind of tea gardens. The cricket ground up there is second to none. Decent hotels, great food. You'll absolutely love it.
Cox's Bazaar has been mentioned to me. What's that like, Cox's Bazaar?
Yeah, so Cox's Bazaar is down south, close to Chittagong. So yeah, huge long beach. Number one on my list of places to go.
Okay. It shouldn't be number one on my list either, then, should it?
It kind of, in an odd way, reminds me of Blackpool a little bit. Kind of the place that everyone goes for, like, you know, a weekend away sort of thing. There are actually a couple of other places. There's a huge mangrove forest. I don't know how accessible these places are anymore. I went about 10 years ago. There's a huge mangrove forest called the Shingabongs. Oh, the remaining Bengal tigers, I'm not sure. I think they're in there.
That sounds dangerous.
that's an absolute beautiful part of the world, you know.
Well, when we find out in the newspapers that the high-performance head coach of the Bangladesh Cricket Board has been mauled by a Bengal tiger on his travels, then we know who to blame now, don't we? Tohid Qureshi and Toby Radford, it's been a pleasure to talk to you today. It's been interesting, actually, from my perspective. I don't know a huge amount about Bangladesh, so it's been interesting from my perspective to hear you both talking about Bangladesh cricket. And thank you very much indeed for joining me on the Cricket Badger podcast today.
Great to speak to you both. Thanks ever so much.
Yeah, thanks, James. Thanks, Toby. It's that Badger style.
Thank you again to Tohid and to Toby for joining me on the podcast today. Interesting chat about Bangladesh cricket. Hopefully you enjoyed that as well. That was recorded last week, so hopefully Toby is back safe and sound in Cardiff now after experiencing an event-free travel back home on the airlines. Thank you to everybody for listening. Just a little bit of a hark back to the IPL dailies. The number of listens we got through those shows was huge. So thank you so much for tuning into the Cricket Badger podcast. And stay tuned as well. Give it a like, give it a subscribe, leave some nice feedback if you can. Every little helps. I've got some really good podcasts planned in the near future, and I'll bring you those as soon as I possibly can. Wherever you are in the world, you can count yourself a cricket badger. Stay safe out there, everybody, and I'll see you next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.